ice cream and puppies. It's a little bit of everything for everyone, because I know you're all feeling down. You're getting cabin fever during this coronavirus pandemic. And I have combed through the internet, the archives, the Baycentric books, just trying to find something that is fun about this area, something that you love, something that has no downside whatsoever. And this is what I landed on, ice cream and puppies. So today, we're going to talk about the introduction of ice cream into America, as well as the state dog of Maryland, the Chesapeake Bay Retriever. I'm Bert. This is Baywide, the podcast all about Chesapeake Bay history, health, and culture. Now, you've definitely noticed I've been away from this show for a long time. I'm super rusty right now trying to get a new episode to you, the first one of 2020, and it's already, well, early April, mid-April. So I got a new career. It entails living at an academy where I have no access to my phone. I can't do anything non-work related, and I've never had less time in my life for like anything personal, and this is kind of a personal project, right? So in all honesty, I have no idea when I'll be able to get more episodes out to you, but I'm going to try anytime I get some time off on a weekend, if I'm not just swamped by other things. So basically, this is a huge disclaimer, right? This could be like the only episode that comes out. But my offer to give any of you listeners the reins of this vast empire and podcasting prowess remains open. If you have an idea for a show, you want to take over for an episode or even a whole season, I'd love to share anything that gets people excited about Chesapeake Bay Area when I can't sub in. This land of pleasant living's got a lot to offer. I don't have a lot of time, but you might. Maybe you're just sitting at home. I hope you're gainfully employed, but maybe you have some more time when, you know, let's be honest, we're not that productive when we're working from home. You can email me at burtbaywide@gmail.com, or you can tweet to me at burtbaywide. Full disclosure, I get caught up in my studies. I haven't been responding to people as often as I should. It's been like a full month or so after they initially contacted me that I finally get around to it. So I apologize for that for sure. But also, knowing myself, that habit isn't going to change much. So to expect a little bit of delay, but I'm going to try to be better. I probably won't, I'll be honest. Now, on to ice cream, the best dessert choice. If you like sherbet, just go ahead and stop listening, because I question all of your life choices, and honestly, I suggest that you reevaluate every mistake you've ever made in your life. Really dwell on it, all right? Now, the history of ice cream has many origin stories. It's kind of like how every ancient civilization just kind of independently figured out that pyramids are a dope structure. Well, multiple civilizations also figured out that if you combine ice or snow with some sweetness, it's heller addicting. So today we're not going to be getting into all of that, because that would be worldwide history. And this is Baywide, right? I operate in a strict paradigm that everything on this show is Bay Area only. That's kind of the whole shtick of this show, you feel? So suffice to say, you know, 200 BC was the dawn of ice cream. And honestly, I'm surprised that historians didn't just use that as a point of gradient for judging history. Like, instead of this whole before Christ, after Christ thing, why didn't we just go with before ice cream, after ice cream? But I don't know, is that too blasphemous? Well, anyway, that's my TED Talk. Thanks for coming. Anyway, fast forward 1,000 years, people were mixing honey and snow together, anything to get their fix. And fast forward 1,000 years after that, you got Marco Polo coming back from East Asia with all those really fine oriental rugs, but also just like objectifying an entire culture in the process. Anyway, he brought a recipe to Italy that was essentially sherbet. So obviously, since sherbet is just totally trash, you can see how little ice cream technology changed in the progress of a millennium. The English and the Italians at the same time, you know, independently, they tweaked the sherbet recipe and they made ice cream. You know, and after this ice cream thing was going on and people actually had a name for it, there wasn't really many honorable mentions. Like Charles I, he dined regularly and he was like, yo, ice cream's good. Come over to my house. I'll entertain you. You can have some ice cream. A cafe in Paris introduced it in 1660. Cafe Procoupe. I don't know. Is that how the French say it? Anyway, it was in Paris. And this info, by the way, I'm getting it off from the International Dairy Association, because as you know, an international lobby conglomerate would never steer you wrong. But the real question is, when is Britain going to let the lonely and lowly colonies get in on this ice cream secret? Like, is this why the American Revolution was fought? Something about taxation without representation. And while you're at it, you best be sharing your recipe for the ice nectar of the gods. Well, I've actually found no evidence of that, and I shouldn't have even said it, but I'm just, the fact that I'm uttering it, I'm sure will lead to an entire 4chan conspiracy theory online. But anyway, the first official account of ice cream in America happened, where you ask? Well, it's something kind of important, and also it shouldn't be a surprise to you because this whole thing's about the Bay Area. It happened in the Bay Area. More specifically, six commissioners of Indian Affairs from Stafford Hall, Virginia, were heading up to Port Deposit, Maryland, and they stopped by Annapolis on the way up. They anchored in the harbor with their yacht named Margaret. Very creative name, right? And in May of 1744, they met up with then-governor of Maryland, Governor Thomas Bladen. And when they were all getting served after dinner, they got a dessert that the secretary wrote was no less curious, some fine ice cream, which with strawberries and milk, eat most deliciously. That's a little excerpt from a book called Chesapeake Fact, Fiction, and Fun. But unfortunately, without refrigeration, ice cream was still not a common occurrence. The only time you could really have it is when you just happen to be six dudes going up to suppress an entire civilization of Native Americans and take away more rights, and you just happen to stop by a governor's house, and he's like, yo, you guys heard about this ice cream stuff? So not very often people were eating ice cream. That didn't really stop George Washington, though. After he won the American Revolution, or, you know, helped with it, I guess, whatever. Anyway, he became first president. In the summer of 1790 alone, he spent $200 on ice cream, according to merchant's records from Chantham Street, New York. If you're curious what that translates to in today's monetary value, it is $5,623. But just caution against those kind of calculations. Inflation is totally different for various products. It's not like a standard thing you can just easily plug into a calculator, even though that's exactly what I did. I plugged it into an online calculator. Still, a lot of money, right? So George's house, actually, at Mount Vernon, he had two pewter ice cream pots, and he even had an 18-step recipe for baked Alaska. So the man went hard in the ice cream. Still, most people weren't getting the hookup. They weren't getting the ice cream. It's just for elites. By 1800, insulated ice boxes were invented, and then people could finally start manufacturing ice cream, and industry could revolve around it. And guess where ice cream production really got its start? You're damn right. It was the Bay Area. I mean, that was a leading question. You probably knew, but it was in 1851. A Baltimore milk dealer by the name of Jacob Fussell used steam power and homogenizers and created a boom in production. Now, by 1874, everyone was getting their ice cream fix, and there was a bunch of these American soda fountains popping up all over the country. And that's where you had, you know, like the soda jerk job where you're just kind of like serving up ice cream sodas. And weirdly, people got super religious and were like, hey, you can't be open on Sunday because you can't have sinfully rich things on religious days. So soda jerks actually invented the ice cream sundae in the late 1890s. Which left out the carbonated water, and somehow that appeased religious people into being like, all right, you can stay open on Sundays. You probably know this story, right? So I won't spend too much time on it. Anyway, ice cream became a staple. America, in particular, really was in love with it. And to this day, America eats about 2.6 billion liters of ice cream a year. So, you know, when you go to the grocery store, you'll notice that there are entire, like several freezers dedicated to ice cream here in America. And unfortunately, I don't know, for whatever reason, there's like a half freezer dedicated to sherbet. But anyway, you'll notice that during these pandemic times, besides toilet paper, ice cream is another product that has been very hard to keep stocked as people are just continuously eating their feelings during these stay-at-home order times. So if you get your hand on some ice cream this month, just think back to 1744 and that guy that had ice cream for the very first time, because, you know, it eats most deliciously. All right, moving on to another thing that we all love, doggos, more specifically the Chesapeake Bay Retriever doggo. And the legend how this dog breed came to exist is really a fantastic story. Way better than the ice cream story. I probably should have led with this one. The origins are from a shipwreck. I know, intriguing, right? In 1807, and two dogs were rescued from and subsequently bred with the local Bay Area dogs, which were kind of curated to meet the demands of waterfowl hunting. So I'm going to go ahead and just read the entire account written by a guy named George Law, who was actually one of the guys that rescued some people from the shipwreck. Ready? Here we go. In the fall of 1807, I was on board the ship Canton, belonging to my uncle, the late Hugh Thompson of Baltimore, when we fell in at sea near the termination of a very heavy equinoctial gale with an English brig in a sinking condition and took off the crew. The brig was loaded with codfish and was bound to Pole in England from Newfoundland. I boarded her, in command of a boat from the Canton, which was sent to take off the English crew, the brig's own boats having been all swept away and her crew in a state of intoxication. I found aboard of her two Newfoundland pups, male and female, which I saved, and subsequently, on our landing the English crew at Norfolk, our own destination being Baltimore, I purchased these two pups of the English captain for a guinea apiece. Being bound again to sea, I gave the dog pup, which was called Sailor, to Mr. John Mercer of West River, and the slut pup, which was called Canton, to Dr. James Stewart of Sparrows Point. The history which the English captain gave me of these pups was, that the owner of his brig was extensively engaged in the Newfoundland trade, and had directed his correspondent to select and send him a pair of pups of the most approved Newfoundland breed, but of different families, and that the pair I purchased of him were selected under this order. The dog was of a dingy red color, and the slut black. They were not large, the hair was short, but very thick-coated. They had dew claws. Both attained great reputation as water dogs. They are most sagacious in everything, particularly so in all duties connected with duck shooting. Governor Lloyd exchanged a merino ram for the dog, and at the time of the merino fever, when such rams were selling for many $100s, and took him over to his estate on the eastern shore of Maryland, where his progeny were well known for many years after, and may still be known there, and on the western shore as the sailor bred. The slut remained at Sparrow's Point till her death, and her progeny were and are still well known, through Patapsco Neck and the gunpowder, and up the bay amongst the duck shooters, as unsurpassed for their purposes. I have heard both Dr. Stewart and Mr. Mercer relate most extraordinary instances of the sagacity and performance of both dog and slut, and would refer to you, their friends, for such particulars as I am unable, at this distance of time, to recollect with sufficient accuracy to repeat. Yours in haste, George Law. So the too long didn't read on that one is, once this guy, George Law, went back out to sea, he gave these dogs to different breeders, and there was never any recorded mating of the two dogs, so they kind of had their own breeding from a Western Shore standpoint and Eastern Shore standpoint with all the local dogs, labs and such, and they were pretty much bred exclusively for their hunting prowess, their ability to have that like really nice thick coat that was kind of almost waterproof, love of the water, the really broad shoulders and chest that was like cutting through ice basically, and they had excellent insulating properties. Anyway, I'll get into more of that later. But they were bred in sufficient enough like strains, basically, that by 1877 at the Poultry and Fanciers Association show in Baltimore, they were recognized as like one breed, the Chesapeake Bay Ducking Dog. These dogs are known for their water-resistant double coat. They have like an outer coat that's short and wavy and an undercoat that's fine and woolly and contains natural oils to help protect the dog during the long cold swims that are required for duck retrieving in the bay area. The coats also range in camouflage colors from like dark brown to tan or kind of like a brownish grass color. I'd probably just say dark brown is the most common. And some Chessies have white spots on them. But what's really unique and has been traced all the way back to Sailor and Canton is the characteristic like yellowish or amber eye color. In fact, the Mercers that bred Sailor wrote a lot about him, and they said, his eyes, this is a quote, his eyes were very peculiar. They were so light as to have almost an unnatural appearance, something resembling that is termed a whale eye in a horse, and it is remarkable that in a visit which I made to the Eastern Shore, nearly 20 years after he was sent there in a sloop, which had been sent expressly for him, to the West River by Governor Lloyd, I saw many of his descendants who were marked with this peculiarity. This breed of dog, they're very affectionate, protective, bright, happy usually, but they are pretty territorial and they're very strong-willed. So they're different than other retrievers in that they are more aggressive and they can be willful and reserved with strangers. There is a saying about the dogs that you can order a lab, you can ask a golden, but you must negotiate with a Chesapeake. Since late 1800s and when it got its own official breed status, the Chesapeake Bay Retriever has exploded in popularity in all regions that waterfowl hunting is done, but especially in the Chesapeake Bay area, particularly because of the crazy cold conditions that the bay is. It being so shallow, it loses heat so quickly that hunters were not getting as many ducks retrieved in a day because the dogs would just get too cold. The Chesapeake Bay Retriever, on the other hand, has been recorded retrieving over 300 ducks in a single day. It's really given its namesake so famous that it's actually the official state dog established in 1964. You got the UMBC. Their mascot is, of course, the retriever. So anyway, that does it for this episode of Baywide. Thank you guys for joining me. I know it was a little bit choppier than usual, but I'm getting back in the grind, getting back in the flow of things. Hopefully I'll get another episode that won't just be all happiness of clouds and ice cream and dogs for you. Maybe we'll do some more history. History seems to be the things that you guys are into more than the science, but honestly, I got a science background, so I might have to just dabble in some science on occasion, give you some updates on the state of the bay and things. All right, have a great one. Stay safe. Don't be spreading any diseases. Until next time. We'll be right back. Whew, so it has been a while since I have made a Chesapeake Bay related meme that is solely based off of what I talk about in the show. So honestly, I just stole this meme. You know, I mean, that's how most memes are shared. Okay, they're just stolen. But anyway, I'm going to give credit to this one. This one is all about the Chesapeake Bay Retriever. And it's, here's the situation. It's Batman slapping, I think it's Robin. Maybe it's not. I really should know this meme better. Anyway, it's a cartoon. Batman slapping a guy. And the guy starting to talk in his little thought bubbles. It says, "What a cute chocolate lab." And then ellipses. And then Batman has thoroughly slapped this guy's face. And he's like, "Is a Chesapeake Bay Retriever?" Exclamation point. So a lot of people get upset that people mistake retrievers for just another lab when they're totally not. But I totally get it. They totally look like chocolate labs. So whatever. All right. That's the meme. Yeah. It wasn't a very good one. But it is something that Karen would share on Facebook. You know it.